Well, we certainly talked about it a lot on Monday's show. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2 were this past Sunday night. Episodes 3 and 4 will be this Sunday night, and a guy who was featured a lot in that was Sam Smith. He's been covering the Bulls for a long time, now with Bulls.com, and he is on the line with us. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
How are things in Chicago? I know it's been rough there as well. Is everybody staying safe?
Big cities are not the greatest place to be, although I'm out in the suburbs. One advantage we have is that our weather this time of year is usually so miserable, nobody wants to go out anyway. So we're viewing that as one of the rare positives of spring, usually not arriving till June.
Do you, episodes 1 and 2, did you view that as a positive? How did you think it was done? Obviously, it was well-received. They had great ratings. But what did you think of what we've seen to this point?
Well, that's usually the test. You know, people tuned in, and I think the reaction was they're anxious to see more. So, you know, I think ESPN's doing a great job with it. Obviously, the timing helps. People are, don't have any live sports to follow. And here's something different and something new rather than, watching more reruns of the 2004 World Series or something. It's interesting to me in the sense, my view is different because I was there for all of it and sort of lived it, covering the Bulls and the NBA all through the 80s and 90s and, Jordan's coming, Jordan's going, all the dramas of his retirements, his returns, and what each day was bigger than the next. But I think they got the basic theme of it right. I think because they have to make it a dramatic story in some sense, and there were dramatic elements to it, at least in a sports sense. There's always an element of like all the things you see on TV, the great stories based on a true story. So. Yeah, I happen to personally, believe there were behind the scenes sort of elements that Phil and Michael realized this thing really didn't have any legs, and to get through the 97-98 season was going to be extraordinary. Much like Michael, I think he was looking back to 92-93, the third year of their first three-peat, and how exhausted he was and how burned out and how anxious he was to leave. And now at his age and now the age of the other players and the erratic behavior of Rodman, who the previous season had missed, 25 or 30 games with suspensions and injuries. I think in that playoff series in 97, I think he got a technical in every game.
So,
Michael was looking like, this guy could implode any day. So I think they latched on to that Last Dance thing as, at least Michael's standpoint, a great motivational ploy. Wow, yeah, they're trying to get rid of us. I'll show them, one of those. He always built up some sort of enemy to attack, be it the Pistons, or Jeff Van Gundy's lack of respect, whatever it was. And I think that was a great, so they had played it. They played it in the theme that, no matter what happens, there's no way to come back. And I kind of believe they weren't coming back anyway, but makes for a great story.
No doubt. If Jerry Krause was with us here today, what do you think? How do you think he would have felt about the way he was depicted in episodes 1 and 2?
Just how he felt every day, the way he was depicted. I mean, they showed the ring ceremony in 1997, and the players coming out and Krause coming out. So this is this is the fifth title in the midst of this great dynasty, and he was booed in the United States, walking out onto the floor, and you saw that sort of embarrassed, half-hearted wave. So. Jerry had and Michael, obviously Michael and Scotty contributed greatly to that, although, Jerry never helped himself. I think as Steve Kerr, mentioned in the quote they used, that couldn't get out of his own way all the time. And so, it's unfortunate someone has died. I'm sure he would have, in the current, would have been furious and fuming again about the depiction of what and what the reason he became, you know, the antagonist figure, because he was at odds with those guys so much, rather than sitting back and just enjoying the fame of what his team was achieving. But that's what you see, you know, the sort of like the, I think the old Kennedy line, you know, victory has 1,000 fathers and, you know, defeat is an orphan. When you have success, be it any field, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people jumping to get in front of the spotlight. And that spotlight around Michael Jordan is pretty big. And he was not that comfortable with Jerry Krause's presence in a lot of occasions.
Sam, what would it have been like today? I mean, we laughed about it on Monday's show of, you know, Tony Romo got crushed for going to Cabo on a week off when they had a bye week in the playoffs. And, you know, some of the things that have come up in today's landscape of social media. To know that Michael Jordan and Danny Ainge played golf in between games 1 and 2 of the playoffs with a member of the media, could you imagine today if something like that got out, what kind of story it would be?
Well, I'll give you a better one than that, what Michael did on the first championship. I'm interested to see if they show that. But he, the team was going to the White House, and he blew up the trip. He said, I've seen presidents before. That's no big deal. And then he said, that was George Bush 1. He said he had a family vacation. And this was before the season, and they, you know, were doing it because they had split up so quickly after the end of the previous season, and then didn't want to do it during the season. And then said he had a family vacation planned, and your family always trumps the president. And it turned out he had gone on the gambling weekend with a guy. He didn't know that, but it turned out to be a convicted drug dealer. So,
oh boy,
what if that had come out at the time on social media? So. Different times. But the other part of it is, you know, much like they always said about President Reagan being a Teflon president, whatever things happened during, you know, everything sort of flowed. It was that way with Michael. He was such a beloved figure that people, and so popular and appealing. And while those things occurred at the time, and we knew about a lot of them, people would make an excuse and say, well, you know, that's okay, Michael. He deserves the right to do that and have some relaxation. So it was a much different, I wouldn't say much different time, but a much different view toward him, because he wasn't that sort of polarizing figure like a LeBron or Kobe or some of the players have become, and maybe because of the effect of social media, which I think is well take it out of proportion. You know, you read some 8 people making critical comments. So what? Who cares? So back then, you know, we never heard from them. I'm sure they were making the same comments, but fortunately they didn't have a public voice like they do now. So, but those kind of things in that era were not that unusual. And the one thing you couldn't, whatever Michael Jordan did, what transcended it all the time, was there was no way to accuse him of not being a great competitor. So you say, well, if he was playing golf with Danny Ainge, it probably was some sort of a plot to try to undermine Danny Ainge or steal Boston's plays. You know, it wasn't about he was going to give in to the Celtics because, you know, he wasn't committed and he was being wooed by Danny Ainge somehow. So with Michael, nobody worried about he wasn't going to be ready for the next game.
We're talking to Sam Smith, longtime Chicago sports writer, and covered the Bulls all those years, wrote 2 books on those teams. And you can see him throughout this documentary that we were so enthralled in the first 2 parts. So, Sam, how did you prepare yourself, you know, in all of these articles you've written over such a long period of time, and now we're, you know, a good ways removed from that time. How did you get ready for the interviews that they did with you? I just find that fascinating because I love the storytelling element to this.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, maybe I shouldn't. It's sort of admit that, but it's like your family. You know, you can tell stories off the top of your head about things that happened when you were growing up or whatever. And so, you know, for all these years, I was essentially embedded with this team, for good or bad. Literally the first week Jordan was in Chicago, I was with the Chicago Tribune for almost 30 years. And, you know, went to his apartment to spend an afternoon with him to do a feature story, and was at his first games, and, you know, when he quit, every one of the games, his last game in D.C. in 2003 when he was, in Philly when he was with the Wizards, that was his last game. And, had so many years traveling, especially, in the 80s when the team didn't have private planes and we all traveled together and we were up, for the 5 a.m. wake-ups to get to the airport at 6 to get that first flight out so you wouldn't be late for the next game. And so it for better or worse, it was an intimate part, of my work professional experience. The other part of those, I've done a few of those, and you always try to help other journalists because, your job is to bother people, basically, ask them questions. So, if somebody wants to ask you something, you have an obligation. But, and I think the Rodman documentary I was in and a couple others over the years. But what I always found on those was, you sit with them for like 2 or 3 hours, and then they use about like 7 seconds of
right.
So I really never pay much attention when I go in. I just sit down figuring, we'll just talk for a while and they won't use anything. So I just really do those things casually. But having been around them so long, and like you said, I wrote 3 books. Jordan Rules, was the most famous one. But I sort of went back again 5-6 years ago, and I did sort of a narrative oral history of Jordan's career, quoting all his top competitors who played against him, guys I knew well, and Bird and Magic and Isaiah, and President Obama as well, being in Chicago, and he consented to talk about it, and executives, Popovich, coaches, and so it was a sort of a combination. So I sort of reviewed, and that was called There Is No Next. And the point I was trying to make with the title is I kept hearing, Kevin Durant, he's next, and then LeBron, of course, and Kobe. And I said, no, there is no next. There may be other guys come along and who better basketball players or have, more records. LeBron may end up with the most points in NBA history. But there's nobody's going to surpass what this guy meant to society and his impact and, the shoes and the shaved head, wearing the earrings, his and I think you can see that in the effect that he's worthy enough for a plot, a classic plot for a 10-part documentary.
Yeah.
So, my familiarity with the topic is, has just become because, it's like Zillig. I just happened to be there when a lot of famous things were happening. It wasn't about me, but I just was standing there.
It's all second nature. It's all easy recall for you. So, Sam, parts 3 and 4 we're looking forward to, and this falls right into that first book that you wrote, The Jordan Rules, and we can always remember that phrase. So, take me back to that time when you first put that out there. You're at the beginning of the three-peat for the Bulls. You followed them through that first championship season. The book comes out. How did that change your relationship with the team at all? When you come up with a book like that, and there's so much detail, and I know it wasn't received perfectly by everybody. As you said, you're telling some stories that people maybe from afar would have no idea.
Well, it was received well by the team. It wasn't received that well by Michael, even though I think it was more that people became so controversial because his image at the time was built up, so perfectly and in a sense unfairly, because they were depicting him as this, they had the commercials where he flew up into the treehouse to deliver the kids Coke, and he had all the, main All-American, so-called All-American products, and, nice-looking guy, great smile. Sort of perfect being, and you know, I know from behind the scenes, you know, he's not a bad person. You know, he's not immoral or committing crimes, but, you know, he could be pretty difficult to live with. And so in those years leading up to, the book was just, it was supposed to be just a sort of behind-the-scenes diary, you know, of a team on the rise, but not one that necessarily anyone expected to win. And that was the truth back then, you know, with the Pistons knocking him off every year, and people forget how good Portland was, and they had been in the finals and were the favorites that season. And even among the Bulls, no one ever was talking that season about winning the title. It was all about, can we ever beat the Pistons? And actually, they had a game earlier that season, the first game in Detroit. They got blown out, lost by like 20 or 25. Phil Jackson, I remember after the game, said that, you know, this team might be, you know, might be done. We might have to break it up. You know, Michael is lobbying for Pippen and Grant to be traded. Doesn't think they're tough enough. You know, so in the midst of all this, you know, they end up winning the title. But, you know, Jordan, in his frustration, as essentially came to a rebuilding team in 84. And, you know, while Bird and Magic are winning and he's elevating to this pantheon of NBA greats, he's not winning. So people are saying, well, and just imagine, like you say, what would be in this era if, you know, say LeBron and Durant were winning and, you know, somebody else was a spectacular player, say Westbrook, but his team kept getting knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, you'd say he's a loser. And so that's what they were saying about Jordan. And so he's growing frustrated. And, you know, his manic competitiveness that we know about and have seen over the years would lash out in practice or with teammates, but also, you know, he had this great wit about him, so he's, you know, he's able to verbally tackle teammates. And I remember guys over the years would get frustrated and would say to me, you know, why don't you write this? And I said, well, glad to. Yeah, that'd be a great story. I'll quote you. No, you can't quote me on that. You know, he said, but as when it came that I was going to write a book about it, there were a lot of players who said, well, you can't quote me for today, but you can quote me for a book, you know, down the road, whatever. You know, and so that's what I did. And so when it came out, there was a lot of criticism toward Jordan, and a criticism, but everywhere we'd go that season, I was still with the team. The first question, you know, one of the questions at the next press conference, whatever city we stop in, and everyone was only talking to Jordan always, was, well, you know, are you really a jerk? And so I don't, I doubt he ever read the book. I doubt he did. But, of course, you don't like being asked that. But now what evolved to with all the success and the championships was that this is what a leader is about. And you know, you don't make friends by being a leader. You push people to places maybe that they can't go themselves. And sometimes you have to do it, you know, with an edge. And so I think that's why Michael said like a week ago in an interview he did with Good Morning America that people see this and a lot of them are not going to like me. Well, of course, that's not true. It's going to be the opposite. But that's what he meant by that, I think. And that's what happened when the Jordan rules initially came out, and then what it evolved to is people said, well, yeah, he's got to do some of these things. He's not committing any crimes. But, you know, you got to be tough on some of your teammates because they're not as tough as you.
Fascinating stuff. Sam, really appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe there in Chicago, and we'll do it again down the road. We're all anxious for episodes 3 and 4. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
All right. Same to you. Sam Smith. Bulls.com, been covering them for a long time. Also, as you just heard, author of a couple of books on those teams. We'll come back and wrap up hour number 3 next.